So I'm going to start off today by asking you a question. Does God approve of your life? Now, that's a big question and a tough question to answer, I think. Is God pleased with how you're living your life? Can you gain God's approval by being religious? Can you gain His approval by coming to church? Can you gain God's approval by keeping the Ten Commandments? And I could go on. I would say a no to all of those examples. And of course, all those things are very important. But is that really what gains God's approval in our life? So the question is, how do we please God? And that's a question that could have many, many different answers. If you want to turn to Hebrews 11, we're going to be in Hebrews 11 for the entire sermon today. So if you want to go to Hebrews 11, probably guess what the topic of the sermon will be, since we're going to Hebrews 11, which is the faith chapter. But in Hebrews 11, verse 6, it says this: "But without faith, it is impossible to please Him. For he who comes to God must believe that He is, and that He is a rewarder of those who diligently seek Him." So in this verse here in Hebrews 11, it says that it is impossible to please God without faith. Now, it doesn't say that you only need faith to please God, but he says it is impossible to please God without faith, because we know there's much more to it than just faith. 1 Corinthians 13, verse 13. You don't need to turn there. I'm going to read it. It's a verse we all know very well. It says, "And now abide faith, hope, and love. These three, but the greatest of these is love." So there's more to pleasing God than just faith. But according to Hebrews 11, verse 6, it is impossible to please God without faith. So there's more to it than just faith, but we have to have faith. That's what it says. It's vitally important. I think faith is the foundation that we build the other things on. We build our hope, we build our love, and we build our good works upon faith. It's vitally important. So for the sermon today, I'm going to talk a little bit about faith. Faith is the foundation that we build our relationship with God and Jesus Christ on. And it's a huge topic. I mean, if you look throughout the entire Bible of all the times faith mentioned, it would take you 10 or 20 sermons. Of course, I'm only here for just the one, so I'm just going to be scratching the surface of what faith is. So is it even possible to please God? That is the question I posed in the beginning. After all, He is a holy and righteous God. He is a God who hates sin, and He is not capable of sinning. He is a God who created the entire universe and everything that's in it. And then you realize how weak and frail and sinful that each of us are. So is there a way in which I can be pleasing to such a holy and righteous God? I mean, it's hard enough just to please ordinary people, isn't it? In fact, it seems impossible to please some people, no matter how hard we try. But we should be trying to please God. It doesn't matter how well-liked you are in your community or at your job, or how respected you are by your peers. If it cannot be said that you are pleasing to God, then your life will be a failure. And that's a hard, probably, thing to think about, but I think it's true. You and I need to evaluate our lives to see if we are pleasing God. He says without faith, it's impossible to please Him. Again, it's not just faith that we need, but without it, it's impossible. And we know that we need more than that, because if you look at James chapter 2, verses 14 to 26 talks about that a little bit, about what more we might need. James chapter 2, verses 14 to 26, it says, "What does it profit, my brethren, if someone says he has faith, but does not have works? Can faith save him? If a brother or sister is naked and destitute of daily food, and no one of you says to them, depart in peace, be warmed and filled, but you do not give them the things which are needed for the body, what does it profit? Thus also, faith by itself, if it does not have works, it's dead." So it is not faith alone that pleases God, but the actions and the works and the love and the hope that comes from that faith. That's important, and that's what pleases Him. So as we go through the message today, you will see that it is faith that causes us and encourages us to do these works. Faith is the foundation from which all these works come. So today we're going to look a little bit about faith. Again, God does not say that faith does not say that without faith it is hard to please him. He says it is impossible to please him without faith. So we need it. There are really only two ways to live life. One way, which is the most common way, is to live by sight. We just live each day and go through each day by what we see, what we can see in front of us. We base everything on what we can see. The other way is to live by faith, to base our entire life on what we cannot see. Of course, that's much less common. 2 Corinthians 5, verse 7 says, "For we walk by faith, not by sight." So we live by what we cannot see, which seems odd to a lot, to many people in this world, to live your life by what you cannot see, but that's what we are called to do. Many times in the Bible it says the just live by faith, and I'm going to just list four that I found here that says that the just shall live by faith. In Habakkuk 2, verse 4, it says, "Behold the proud, his soul is not upright in him, but the just shall live by faith." Romans 1, verse 17 says, "For in it the righteousness of God is revealed from faith to faith, as it is written, the just shall live by faith." Galatians 3, verse 11 says, "But that no one is justified by the law in the sight of God is evident, for the just shall live by faith." Hebrews 10, verse 38 says, "Now that the just shall live by faith, but if anyone draws back, my soul has no pleasure in it." So we are to live by faith and not to draw back, as it says there in Hebrews 10. So if we want to be just, we had better live by faith. So faith is critical to believer. Without it, we cannot please God. So the next question is, of course, what is faith? And how do we live and how do we walk in faith? Those are tough questions, and I'm just going to scratch the surface here today. Let's start by looking at what faith is not. What is faith? What faith is not? Yeah. Faith is not positive thinking. A lot of times the word faith is used in regards to, you know, positive thinking. I have faith that this is going to happen. That's not faith. Faith is not a hunch that is to be followed. Faith is not hoping for the best. Hoping that everything will just turn out right. You know, I just have faith that it will, based on nothing. It has to be based on something. Faith is not a feeling of optimism. Faith is not what denomination you belong to. A lot of times you'll hear people say that I belong to the Catholic faith or I belong to the Baptist faith. Faith is none of these things, though all of them are identified as faith. So what is faith then? Well, according to Webster's Dictionary, faith is belief and trust and loyalty to God, or a firm, unquestioned belief in something for which there is no proof. So the dictionary divides it as an unquestioned belief in something for which there is no proof. But how does the Bible define faith? Is there a definition of faith in the Bible? If there is, we should read it. And there is, and it's in Hebrews 11, verse 1. Again, we're going to be in Hebrews 11 here for most of the time. Hebrews 11, verse 1 says, it's the definition of faith. It says, "Now faith is the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen. For by it the elders obtained a good testimony." Now the definition here has three different aspects, or at least three different aspects that I've pulled out. The first aspect is that faith begins with hope. It begins with hope. But it says that faith is the substance of things hoped for. So it starts with hope. Things hoped for. It starts with a sense of what we have here and now today in this world is not all there is. There is something much, much bigger, much, much more. That's where faith starts, with hope. And we need to have that hope for the future. We need to look toward that future, not satisfied with what we have today. Complacency, or the status quo, has always been the enemy of faith. Because we just start to feel what we can see here in this world is just good enough, and we start to lose our faith, or lose that hope. We should always be looking for and hoping for something better. We have hope, and that is part of faith. The second thing that faith is the evidence of things not seen. And that's written right there in verse 1. Faith is the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen. So not only is faith filled with hope, but it's an awareness of things that we cannot see. It means we are aware of an entire spiritual realm all around us that we cannot see. We're aware of it, we believe in it, but we can't see it. It's invisible. It's evidence of things not seen. What we can see is not the whole explanation of life. What we see here physically is not the whole explanation of life. Faith is the evidence of things not seen. There are realities which cannot be seen, but they are as real as anything that we can see. In fact, in some ways they are more real because they are the explanation. They are the evidence of what we can see, what can be seen. How did this world come to exist? Who created it? Faith tells us what we can see in this world is just evidence of what we cannot see. But now let's drop down to verse 6, Hebrews 11, verse 6. Again, I read it, but I'm going to read it again with a different emphasis this time. Verse 6. But without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. It says, for he who comes to God must believe that he is, even if they can't see him. I mean, that's just one of the basic things of faith. We must believe that God is, even though we cannot see him. The third thing of what defines faith here is that faith demands that we believe that God is. Faith demands that we believe that God is. Even though God cannot be seen, faith makes us believe that he is. And that really is the beginning of faith, to believe that he is. But the exact opposite in that is the exact opposite of what is being taught in our schools, in our colleges, and to our young people all over today. When all the evidence of the natural world tells us that he is, mankind teaches that he isn't. When a couple microscopic cells inside a womb starts to grow and life begins and it continues to grow into a child, it tells us that he is. But mankind says he isn't. When we look at the vastness of a night sky, we see millions of billions of stars above. It tells us that he is, but mankind teaches us that he isn't. All we need to do is open our eyes and see this natural world around us to know that God is there. I think that is why Christ told us to become like little children to enter the kingdom of God. Because a little child easily believes. When you have a real small child, they easily believe in their parents or in God. They have faith. They have faith very easily. Because children completely believe in their parents and have total faith. Seems like children have no difficulty at all in believing that God exists, even though they can't see him. But it takes a public school education to convince children that he doesn't. And we see that happening all the time. So that's why we need to have the attitude of a young child and have complete faith. Now let's read back to Hebrews chapter 11, verse 3 this time. Hebrews 11, verse 3. By faith we understand that the worlds were framed by the word of God, so that the things which are seen are not made of things which are visible. This verse says that we can never explain the things which are seen until we recognize that there are things that we can't see. That's the basis of faith. Science cannot tell us how all those stars got into the sky. But by faith, we know. Science cannot tell us how human history is going to end. But by faith, we know. Science cannot tell us what is wrong with humanity and why there's so much evil in this world. But by faith, we know. Science cannot tell us what lies beyond death. To science, it's a mystery. But by faith, we know. So that is how faith is described in Hebrews 11. That's the description of faith in Hebrews 11, verse 1. Now I want to look at some examples of faith. Faith put into practice. How this faith was put into practice and the works that came out of it. I'm going to stay right here in Hebrews 11. Now we know there's many people, men and women listed here in Hebrews 11, but I'm just going to go through a couple here because obviously I don't have time to go through them all, but I'm going to go through four. There are the first four that were mentioned. And I'm going to pull out some points, some practical points that show us faith in practice. Not just having the faith, but practicing that faith and the works that come out of it. The first point I have, there's seven. The first one I have is that without faith, you cannot be accepted by God. Without faith, you cannot be accepted by God. And we can see that in the life of Abel, the very first person listed here in Hebrews 11, verse 4. If you want to go to Hebrews 11, verse 4, it says, by faith, Abel offered to God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, for which he obtained witness that he was righteous. God testified of his gifts, and through it being dead, still speaks. It says, by faith, Abel made his offering. And we know the story about the offering, that his was accepted, and Cain's was not. The story of Cain and Abel is very well known. Even people who don't go to church or don't read the Bible know the story of Cain and Abel. Even in our language today, we use a phrase called raising Cain, which comes from this story. You know, making trouble, raising Cain. It is the first murder in history, when one brother killed another. We know that Cain farmed the soil while Abel raised livestock. And Cain brought an offering from his crops, while Abel brought a sacrifice of the best of his herd. God accepted Abel's offering, and he rejected Cain's offering. Now, there were many reasons, perhaps, why God rejected Cain's sacrifice. Maybe because it was not a blood offering. Maybe he had the wrong attitude or the wrong heart. But Hebrews 11, verse 4 says, by faith, Abel offered to God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain. So according to Hebrews 4 here, it was the faith of Abel that made his acceptable. Abel had faith, and apparently Cain did not. Abel trusted in God and offered the best that he had. And apparently Cain was just going through the motions. He was going through the motions of his religion, but he didn't have it, the faith in his heart. Genesis 4, verse 4. If you want to turn back to Genesis 4, I'm just going to touch on the story here a little bit. In Genesis 4, verse 4 and 5, it says that God looked with favor on Abel and his offering. It's back to the story in Genesis 4, verses 4 and 5. It says, Abel also brought of the firstborn of his flock and of their fat, and the Lord respected Abel and his offering. But he did not respect Cain and his offering. The Cain was very angry, and his countenance fell. So here were the first two brothers, Abel and Cain. They both knew about God. They were both taught about God, and they were both pursuing a relationship with God. But one had faith, and one did not. Hebrews 11, verse 4 says, by faith Abel offered his offering, and it was more excellent than Cain's. Cain chose to believe that one way was as good as another. He took the easy way out, and he was just going through the motions of the religion, and he was rejected because of it. Genesis 4, verse 6, I'm just going to read verse 6 now. So the Lord said to Cain, why are you angry, and why has your countenance fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? So without faith, you will not be accepted by God. That's my first point. Second point, without faith, you cannot walk with God or please God. So without faith, you cannot walk with God or please God. Let's go back to Hebrews 11 now. Again, I'm going to keep going back to Hebrews 11 if you just want to stay there or flip back there. Hebrews 11, verses 5 to 6 now. We're going to continue down this chapter. Hebrews 11, verse 5. It says, for by faith Enoch was taken away so that he did not see death. It was not found because God had taken him. For before he was taken, he had his testimony that he pleased God. That's quite a testimony to have about your life, that you pleased God. But that's what it says about Enoch. Verse 6. But without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he who comes to God must believe that he is, and he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. So the story of Enoch is a short story, and it's found in Genesis 5. If you want to flip back there, you can. I'm going to read just a couple verses in Genesis 5. Verses 21 to 24 that talk about Enoch. Genesis 5, verse 21 to 24. It says, Enoch lived 65 years and begot Methuselah. So he was the father of Methuselah. After he begot Methuselah, Enoch walked with God 300 years and had sons and daughters. So all the days of Enoch were 365 years. And Enoch walked with God, and he was not found, for God took him. So Enoch was 65 years old when he had his son Methuselah. And after Methuselah, he walked with God 300 more years. Now the story of Enoch is more a story of a journey of faith. You know, not an entire life, but the last 300 years of his life was a walk with God, a journey with God, of faith. All of us are on a journey as well. We're all looking for something. Maybe we're looking for a purpose in life. Maybe we're looking for an identity, a fulfillment in our lives. We're looking for satisfaction. Enoch found God, and it says he walked with him. The question is, can it be said about you that you walk with God? I mean, that's certainly a testimony that we would want to be said about us. And of course, we must have faith, as it says right there in those verses, that without faith, it would be impossible. Okay. Now I'm going to go back to Hebrews 11 again. Flip back to Hebrews 11, verses 5 and 6 again. I'm just going to read it again. It says, by faith, Enoch was taken away so that he did not see death. It was not found because God had taken him. For before he was taken, he had his testimony that he pleased God. Again, it's a tremendous testimony. But without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those that diligently seek him. So Enoch pleased God. And without faith, that would be impossible. So now my third point about faith from these verses here is that without faith, you cannot be saved from destruction. Without faith, you cannot be saved from destruction. And that example is found in the story of Noah, which is the very next verse, Hebrews 11, verse 7. Hebrews 11, verse 7 talks about Noah. It says, by faith, Noah, being divinely warned of things not yet seen, moved with godly fear, prepared an ark for the saving of his household, by which he condemned the world and became heir of righteousness, which is according to faith. Now, all of us know about the story of the flood and the ark, the gathering of the animals. We know that Noah and his family were saved while the world around him was destroyed. For 120 years, he preached the truth and tried to call people to repent. Then the flood finally came, and only 8 people were saved. Noah and his wife, his 3 sons, and their 3 wives. It says that by faith, Noah, being divinely warned of things not yet seen, so he was warned of things he couldn't see, but he had faith, and it moved him with godly fear to prepare an ark for the saving of his household. So his faith moved him to do something. It moved him to work, to do works. By faith, he believed God about things he could not see. Noah had great faith in God. And his faith influenced his entire family. Nothing is said here about the faith of his wife or the faith of Shem, Ham, and Japheth, his sons, or their wives. It just talks about the faith of Noah. But they all got in the boat with him. I think there's no doubt that his faith was a big influence on his family. They could see his faith, and it influenced them. And I think something as fathers, mothers, grandparents, aunts, uncles, whatever, something we can perhaps think about in our lives as well. So as bad as things are today, they were worse in Noah's day. Back then, there were only 8 true believers in the entire world. So all we need to do is have the courage that Noah had, to believe, to have faith, and then to work according to that faith. He believed him when God told him there was a flood coming. When Noah said this, everyone in the world around him just laughed and told him he was crazy. He was foolish. But Noah went right ahead and he built the boat. And then he finished it and he filled it with the animals. He was led by his faith to become what it says in verse 7. Verse 7 says, he's an heir of righteousness, which is according to faith. And that brings me to my fourth point, number 4. Fourth thing we can learn here from these verses, beginning in Hebrews 11, which is faith is believing even when you don't see it. Faith is believing in something even when you can't see it. We already read it, I'm going to read it again. Hebrews 11, verse 7. By faith, Noah, being divinely warned of things not yet seen, moved with godly fear, prepared an ark for the saving of his household, which he condemned the world and became heir of righteousness, which is according to faith. So by faith, he was warned of things not yet seen, and was moved in godly fear to prepare an ark. He took action. He worked, even though he was warned of things that he couldn't see. There was no physical evidence of any of this stuff, but he still took action. Faith does not see and then believe. It believes and then sees. That's how faith works. And that's how it worked in Noah's case. We saw how faith caused Abel to worship God. Faith caused Enoch to walk with God. And now faith caused Noah to work for God, even though he couldn't see what was coming. Now for my fifth point, I'm going to look at the example of Abraham, which is the very next verse, Hebrews 11, verse 8. It goes right into Abraham. So for my fifth point, faith involves a willingness to obey. If we have true faith, we are willing to obey. Even if we don't understand why, we are willing to obey, even if we don't understand why. And for that example, let's look at the next verse, Hebrews 11, verse 8. It says, by faith, again, it starts by those two words, by faith. Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place which he would receive as an inheritance. He went out not knowing where he was going. So it was by faith that Abraham went out where God told him to go, and he had no idea where he was going. In verse 8, we're told, by faith, Abraham obeyed, even though he did not know where he was going. It says he was called to go out to a place in which he would receive as an inheritance. Just like we are called out to go out and receive an inheritance as well. And we have to go out by faith, just as Abraham did. And it says, by faith, Abraham obeyed and took action to follow this calling. And by faith, we must follow as well. So what will your friends and family, your children and grandchildren, know about the life of faith by remembering your life? And that's a question we can ponder when we're just sitting around thinking. What will your children and grandchildren know about a life of faith by remembering your life, maybe after you're gone? How will you and I be remembered? Will we be remembered by our faith, like these men are? Now, these men were recorded and written down in the chapter of faith here in Hebrews 11. But what about our lives? Will we be remembered by our faith? That's a question I think we should ponder. Abraham heard a calling, and as soon as he understood what God was telling him to do, he believed God and he responded in faith, not even knowing where he was going. Proverbs 3, verse 5. You don't need to turn there. But Proverbs 3, verse 5 says, trust in the Lord with your whole heart and lean not on your own understanding. So we aren't to lean on our own understanding, but have complete faith in God. The fact that God's instructions didn't make sense to Abraham didn't stop him. That didn't stop him. Even though he didn't understand where he was going or why he was going, it didn't stop him. He had faith. James 2, verse 18 says, but someone will say, you have faith, and I have works. Show me your faith without your works, and I will show you my faith by my works. So people should see our faith by our works, and that's certainly evident in these examples. Genuine faith is obeying, even when we don't understand it, and showing our faith by our works. So my sixth point, number six. Faith involves a willingness to wait. If we have faith, we have to be willing to wait. Because many times it is a long wait, at least in our terms, in our reckoning of time, it seems like a long time that we have to wait. And again, we're going to go back to the example of Abraham here. This time, Hebrews 11, verse 9, the very next verse. Now, verse 9 through 12. By faith, again, starts out by faith. By faith he dwelt in the land of promise as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob. The heirs with him of the same promise, for he wanted for the city which his foundation, his builder and maker, is God. So he was dwelling in a place in tents, waiting for the city which his foundation, his builder, was God. So he had to wait. Abraham had to wait. Verse 11. By faith, Sarah found herself also received strength to conceive seed, and she bore a child when she was past the age, because she judged him faithful who had promised. Therefore, from one man, and him as good as dead, were born as many as the stars of the sky in multitude, innumerable as the sands which is by the seashore. So verse 9 and 10 tell us that Abraham dwelt in tents and waited for the city whose builder was God. And Abraham and Sarah, of course, waited for their son. Many times faith causes us or demands us to wait for that promise. True faith is waiting for the fulfillment of God's promise in his timing. Now, the descendants of Abraham also had faith by waiting. Let's continue reading. Verse 13 now. I'm going to read verses 13 to 14. It says, these all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on earth. We can see ourselves in that verse, I think. This is kind of how we are now. We have not yet received God's promises, and we are pilgrims and strangers on this earth. We can see these promises afar off, but we have to have faith to wait. Verse 14. For those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland. And truly, if they had called to mind the country from which they had come out, they would have had opportunity to return. But they desire a better, that is, a heavenly country. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. And that's really the hope and the faith that we have as well. He's assured them that he's going to prepare a place for them. And we have that same faith that he will do the same for us. Just another verse to kind of further that point is in John 14. John 14, verses 1 to 3. It's a well-known verse. I'm just going to read it. It says, let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would not have told you. I go prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you to myself. And where I am, you will also be. Of course, that's a huge promise. And with faith, we look forward to that. So true faith involves willingness to wait. Now my seventh point, and this is the last one. Seventh point. Faith involves a willingness to sacrifice. When we have faith, we have to be willing to sacrifice. Again, back to Hebrews 11, verse 17 to 19 now. Hebrews 11, 17 to 19. Verse 17, by faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. And he who had received the promises offered up his only begotten son, of whom it is said, in Isaac your seed shall be called, concluding that God was able to raise him up, even from the dead, from which he also received him in a figurative sense. So faith has to have a willingness to sacrifice. It was by faith that Abraham offered up his only son as a sacrifice when God tested him. Abraham demonstrated a willingness to give God the most important thing that he had in his life. The most important thing Abraham had in his life was his son. And he was willing to sacrifice that because he had faith in God. He had that faith. So what is the most important thing in your life? Would you be willing to sacrifice because of your faith? God would not settle for second place in anyone's life. And of course, in not our lives either. Sometimes we don't have any trouble sacrificing things that aren't important to us. Maybe money's not that important to us, so we'll easily give money. We'll sacrifice that. But God is not interested in your money or your possessions. Of course, he's interested in our hearts. For some of you, the most important thing in your life maybe is your family. For others, the most important thing in your life maybe is your career or your dreams of the future and what you're building. Abraham was willing to give up everything for God, his most cherished possession. And as a result, he received back far more than he was willing to give. So true faith involves sacrifice. So now that we know what faith is, we've kind of defined it. Of course, again, I'm scratching the surface here. You could go on for hours about faith. And we know some of the attributes from some of the stories of these men, some of the attributes that faith has. The question becomes to us, do we have faith? Do we have enough faith? If we do, then it should change the way that we're living. If we have true faith, it should change the way that we live. That's why the phrase, by faith, by faith, by faith, kept being repeated over and over again in this chapter. It's all about, and that's what the chapter is all about. There must be works that go with that faith. It can't be just faith alone. It has to be by faith this was done, by faith that was done. There needs to be works from that faith. Do we take faith seriously as we should? Generally, we are not a trusting people, especially maybe in this country at this time. We don't trust each other, perhaps. We certainly don't trust our government. We don't trust our government officials. We don't trust our bosses at work, perhaps. Perhaps we don't even trust our neighbors. We don't trust the doctors. We don't trust the vaccines. We don't trust all kinds of things. And many people today don't even really trust or even believe there is a God. Of course, that's not people here today, but people, the society around us, they don't trust or believe there even is a God. And sometimes maybe we take faith for granted. That we have faith, we're always going to have faith, and we're never going to lose our faith. We think it's easy to just keep on believing, but it's not that easy. That's why Hebrews 11 was written, to show us that it's a struggle. It's a struggle to keep our faith sometimes. And over the years, we've all known people and seen people who lost that faith, who thought or showed signs of having great faith and had works to show their faith, but have lost it over time. When you think about it, it takes a lot in order to have true faith. It takes a lot to have true faith. And when you think about it, you must believe that you are God's children. You must believe that He is holy and you are a guilty sinner. You must believe that He sent Jesus Christ, His Son, into the world to atone for your sin. You must believe that if you repent and are baptized, you can be forgiven of that sin and you are washed clean of those sins. You must believe that when you die and your body is laid in the ground, you simply are asleep, waiting for a resurrection into an incorruptible body. You have to believe that Christ will come again to judge the world, the living and the dead, and He will bring His Father's kingdom with Him to this earth. Now, none of those things can be seen with our eyes. All those things that are required that you must believe to have true faith, none of them can be seen with our own eyes. You can't see any of this. You can't prove it in a laboratory. There is no physical evidence of any of this. We have to believe it all based on our faith of God's promises. Christ said He would return, but it's been 2,000 years. We must believe that He will keep this promise. And without God's help, we would never be able to believe and have faith in any of that. Faith comes from God, but it needs to be built up and it needs to be practiced. Your faith needs to be practiced every day in what you do, the love that you show, and the works that you do. And with practice, you can build that faith stronger. And that's why we need to take it seriously. It has to make a difference. It has to change the way we live. So the next question would be, how do we get faith? So how do we get faith? Well, Romans 10, verse 17 says, "So then faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word of God." So we need to read and we need to hear the word of God, and through that, it will build faith. Hebrews 12, verse 2 says, "Looking unto Jesus, the author and the finisher of our faith, who for the joy has set before Him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God." So Jesus Christ is the author and the finisher of our faith. That's where our faith needs to come from. And it needs to be built up through practice every day, through practicing that faith, and by what it said there in Romans 10, the hearing of the word. That's how we get it. It comes from Jesus Christ. He is the author of it. Comes through His word, and we need to put it in practice. to keep it strong in our lives. Now James 2, verse 17 and 18. James 2, verse 17 and 18 says, "Thus also faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead." We've read that before and we know that. But someone will say, "Have you faith and I have works? Show me your faith without your works, and I will show them my faith by my works." Our faith should show up in our works every day. And by continuing on in those works through love, serving others, or whatever it might be, having faith in God's promises, it will build our faith and it will keep it strong in us. So as we get near the end of the message today, I want to give you a couple more examples of what faith does for us. I'm just going to kind of go through these real quick, maybe too quick, but I got just 9 verses here. I'm going to go through them quick. They give you a couple more examples of what faith does for us. Number one, we are saved through faith. That's in Ephesians 2, verses 8 and 9. We are saved through faith. Ephesians 2, verses 8 and 9 says, "For by grace you have been saved through faith, and that not of yourselves, it is a gift of God, not of yours, lest anyone should boast." Number two, we live by faith. Romans 1, verse 17. "For in it the righteousness of God is revealed from faith to faith. It is written, the just shall live by faith." Number three, we receive righteousness by faith. That's in Romans 4, verse 13. For the promise that he would be the heir of the world was not to Abraham or to his seed through the law, but through the righteousness of faith. Number four, we are justified by faith. That's in Romans 5, verse 1. "Therefore, having been justified by faith, we have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ." Number five, we have access to God's grace through faith. We have access to God's grace through faith. That's number five. And that's in Romans 5, verse 2. "Through whom also we have access by faith into the grace in which we stand and rejoice in the hope of the glory of God." Number six, we stand firm in our belief by faith. We stand firm in our belief by faith. And that's in 2 Corinthians 1. 2 Corinthians 1, verse 24. "It says, not that we have dominion over our faith, but our fellow workers for your joy. For by faith you stand." Of course, we saw that in the story of Noah, how he stood because of his faith. Number seven, we receive the promise of the Spirit by faith. And that's in Galatians 3, verse 14. "That the blessings of Abraham might come upon the Gentiles in Jesus Christ, that we might receive the power, we might receive the promise of the Spirit through faith." That's in Galatians 3, verse 14. Number eight, we do God's work by faith. And that's in 1 Timothy 1, verse 4. "Nor give heed to fables and endless genealogies, which cause disputes, rather than godly edification, which is in faith." So we do God's work by faith. And number nine, this is the last one, we wait for the return of Christ by faith. We hope and wait for his return by faith. And that's in Galatians 5, verse 5. "For we through the Spirit eagerly wait for the hope of his righteousness by faith." So those are all things that we receive through faith. So in conclusion today, let's end where we started and ask the same question I started in the very beginning. Is God pleased with your life? Hebrews 11, verse 6 says, "It is impossible to please God without faith." It doesn't matter how well-liked you are by your friends, how respected you are by your peers. If it cannot be said that you are pleasing to God, then your life will be deemed a failure. We learned what faith is, that faith begins with hope. Faith is the evidence of things not seen, that faith demands that we believe that God is. Then we went through 7 attributes that I pulled out. Again, there's hundreds more, but these are the 7 that I pulled out today from some of the people in Hebrews 11. First, without faith, you cannot be accepted by God. Second, without faith, you cannot walk with God or please God. Third, without faith, you cannot be saved from destruction. Fourth, faith is believing even when you can't see it. Fifth, faith involves a willingness to obey. And sixth, faith involves a willingness to wait. And seventh, faith involves a willingness to sacrifice. James 2, verse 17 says, thus also, faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead. I've read that before. We must live out our faith with our works. That's probably the main point of the sermon today. All of the people of faith in Hebrews 11 did something. They all did something. They had works. It said, by faith, Abel offered a more excellent sacrifice. By faith, Enoch walked with God. By faith, Noah built an ark, even when he didn't see any rain. By faith, Abraham followed when God called him out to go somewhere where he didn't even know where he was going. So I'm going to end the message today by reading the last two verses in Hebrews 11. Hebrews 11, verses 39 to 40. I'm going to read those last two verses, and then I'm going to read the two verses of Hebrews 12. So I'm going to read Hebrews 11, verses 39 and 40, and Hebrews 12, verses 1 and 2, because it kind of sums it up, and then I'm just going to end with that. It says, and all these, having obtained a good testimony through faith, did not receive the promise, God having provided something better for us, that they should not be made perfect apart from us. Now Hebrews 12, verse 1. Therefore we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and the finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God.